Dear Shooter, the SIG 320 gets all the hate. Some of it is deserved. But in 2025, the original problems have been debugged. And now here we are with the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission banning its use by officers. But a little deeper look reveals it may not be the gun's fault. That's okay, Washington. Just keep blaming the gun.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip on. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
We got the entire crew assembled to, what are we picking on, SIG again now?
Among other things, I'm sure, but yes.
This is really just keep blaming the gun, okay, Washington State.
Okay, go ahead.
This article came across my email, and we'd actually had a different plan, which you're going to hear next week. It's going to be awesome. But, Washington State, Criminal Justice Training Commission has now banned the 320s because an officer-involved incident. It was I believe it was domestic abuse or a domestic disturbance, but they had to take the guy down, and in the process of the takedown, the gun went off. Now, my understanding is the gun discharged because of a handcuff arm wiggling its way into the holster. The gun never came out of the holster.
It also went into, they state, it went into the trigger guard.
Right.
So what kind of holster are they using?
A
I'm
bucket?
Not sure that's possible.
Well, no, buckets. I don't think they didn't say in the article, but my guess, based on what I've seen most law enforcement carrying, is one of the Safari Lands. I believe it's the ALS.
Completely obscured trigger.
With the hood.
There's no way for something foreign to get into the trigger guard if it's holstered.
Well,
there's not.
That's not entirely true.
Okay, we're going to have to get one and dig it out.
I have one.
Well, go get it, because I don't believe you can get a handcuff hook in there.
Well, I don't know if you could, the one that I have, because it's properly designed. But some of these ones that they're throwing together because of the lights that they're putting on the gun, I don't think they're claiming it's because of the optic happening to have a wider mouth. But I think it's because of the light, because every holster that I have that will take a light, it actually, the retention is to the light.
I'm going to have to yell bullshit. The optic's on the wrong side of the gun for the handcuff.
That's what I'm saying, right.
The light is on the other polar opposite of the gun to have an access to the trigger guard. I don't think this is going to be, I mean, we'll have to get this out and play with it, but I'm going to call bullshit.
I'll pull this out when we go to commercial because I agree, but I'm not going to say it's bullshit.
I'd ask you, but the one that's going to know is, do you have a set of handcuffs, Brandy?
Actually, no.
Damn it. We needed to try and simulate this best we could.
Duct tape.
We know quite a few officers. I think we can do this.
All right.
But what they're really saying that the issue is that the officer's duty belt is overloaded.
I would agree with that.
And that's what's causing the problem. They're carrying too much stuff.
Well, they got to have all the tactical accessories.
Right.
I mean, and not all of them. They've got tasers, and they've got mace, and they've got handcuffs, and a baton, and all kinds of accoutrements.
Well, look at the officers in Shoshone, Wyoming. Population, what, 350 freaking people? These guys look tacked up like I saw guys in Iraq.
They do. And wind tunnel tested hairdos, by the way.
That's true. But I mean, it's crazy all the stuff they carry, and they're in full vests. I think they're still running soft armor. I could be wrong, but even their vests are there's stuff all over it.
I just anything that possibly can be bolted to a pistol, these guys are doing it, and they're doing it for the sake of a duty weapon. And some of that stuff's handy. Don't get me wrong, but there is a certain level of less is more that should be observed in a guy that has to use the tool.
Right.
So do officers really need the weapon light unless they're a door kicker?
They have another flashlight. I guarantee you they have another. Yeah. Maybe two or three.
And I always, like, I do not put lights on my carry guns. Specifically because I don't want to be in a situation where that's my only light. And now I'm searching with the gun.
Wrong application.
That's not, you know, in a more operational fashion. So if I'm doing reconnaissance work or I'm specifically training, kicking in doors, yeah, I'll put a light on it. But that's not a carry gun, number one. That's a duty pistol. It's huge.
It's also intermittent activity.
Right.
It's on, off, move, mm-hmm. on, off, move. You're not using it as a searchlight.
No. No, and they even say in this article, they talk about lights and that, you know, why every officer wasn't issued a weapon light. One agency responded, someone's going to use it to rummage around inside of a car during a traffic stop or to read a driver's license. Ridiculous, right? Wrong. It happened.
And you're right. They get misused all the time. But back to my point, there comes a point where less is more.
Right.
Right? And I'm still extremely skeptical that a handcuff got in there and did this. But I will also say, my feed has been flooded with a lot of drama around this pistol in the, say, last 3 months. Mm-hmm. Probably more than anything else. And it all started when SIG's marketing department came out and said, it all stops now. And because they were fielding lots of complaints about the pistol going off by itself. Instead of going, you know, hey, you know, we'd like to look into this and take it as a serious note, they told the consumers that they were all full of shit and that it isn't happening in a very structured, gaslighting set of marketing speak. And then they got eaten alive for about 3 weeks.
Interesting.
While the initial pistol that came out had some issues because they rushed it to market for a military contract. We all know that story,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen a plethora of videos of guys dropping their gun, throwing their gun, hitting their gun with objects, trying to get it to go click without a trigger press. I've never seen one actually get it to go click without a trigger press. But it's a mechanical device, and it can fail.
Right.
Just like anything else. Now, does it fail all the time? Probably not. Right? But again, what they're claiming here, yes, it's an overdriven tack belt. He's got too much crap around. And why was those handcuffs not secured?
Good question.
There's a lot of questions that arise for me out of this story more than there are answers. I'm still skeptical that it got in the holster. But if it did go off by itself, SIG would be all over this, issuing a recall. The concept of liability of a firearms manufacturer that has a piece of equipment that will take on a mind of its own due to a design flaw.
Yeah, that's a problem.
They need to nip this in the bud right now,
mm-hmm.
not claim that it isn't happening and try and gaslight the consumers.
Well, how many times, and I'm with you, I'm not really blaming SIG for this, although you bring to light that SIG's just not even going to entertain complaints and issues.
Oh, it's
a, which it was, is that's a whole nother can of worms.
A whole thing of nightmare.
But I think this is more about number one, not overloading yourself, because we see this all the time in classes. We see especially AR classes, and even more and more now with our defensive pistol classes, guys are showing up, and they have an optic, they have a light, and they've got this, and extended mags, and all this stuff, and it's like, where do you fit that?
I had a guy in a class one time show up with a chainsaw attached to his carbine.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but yeah, that's straight to my point. Guys are overloading their guns, and I've even seen some of these ARs overloaded to the point they almost wouldn't run.
A lot of the times, it's fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got the green laser and the red laser, and then they've got the red dot sight and the magnified optic and the 45-degree, 30-degree angled mounts for sights. And there is so much crap on the gun that it might forget how to go bang.
Well, and I think it goes back to they've got all of this rail space, right? They think they have to use it all.
Well, they're given a whole lot of accessory rails and spaces and slots where you can put things, and that's all a good thing. You don't have to use them all, though.
Right, right. And I'm going to come back to this. Just because you have it doesn't mean you have to use it. But, you know, the weapon light thing, concealed carry, no weapon light.
Not necessary.
Carry a little flashlight in your pocket. I carry a Surefire in my pocket, reaching in my pocket right now. It is the ProTac 1.
Yeah, it's always on you.
It is. It takes one CR123, and I get about a month out of a battery, and I use this thing every day.
I was just going to say, you use the crap out of that thing.
I do.
But it doesn't belong on your carry pistol.
No.
What does belong on your carry pistol?
I'll run an optic sometimes.
See, I'm old school enough, I don't. I could. I know a guy who makes that stuff. But on my carry gun, it's a utilitarian tool. It is to get me out of the situation that I find poor.
I have been training enough in the last probably 4 or 5 years that I am kind of very, very pro dot. Not saying that you have to go that route. And even with a dot, I insist on suppressor height sights so that I can co-witness. Because if that dot ever goes out, and I have had a dot go out on me, I still need a point of aim.
Sure.
So I'm very much the belt and suspenders guy. But I do like having a dot because I've trained enough with it now that a good quality dot that doesn't have parallax, as soon as you see red on the target, press the trigger.
No, that's fair. That's totally fair. And they are effective. On the range, they turn a gun that I used to shoot at things with to a gun I shoot things with.
Right.
They definitely help.
And let's face it, as we get a little older, our eyes aren't what they used to be.
True.
And that dot is kind of handy.
It's very handy.
So I advocate, well, I guess I can't say I advocate, but if somebody shows up with a dot on their carry gun, I'm not going to disparage them for that.
No, it's a personal choice, and there's really no one way or the other. I personally don't run one, and which is weird because, you know, I make them for a living, but I don't run one on my carry gun.
You should need to make them smaller.
Yeah, but it comes with diminishing returns. You can make them as small as you want, but it just a good set of night sights are all that ever situational needed.
Agreed. And I've got a new set of Hi-Viz's new Speed Dot.
How are you liking that set?
I have not put it on a gun yet. I'm trying to decide what gun it's going to go on.
Interesting.
But I am curious to see how this thing's going to work.
Because the way that those align, not your traditional two dots in the rear single post.
No, it's a little different. So once I get this thing set up and run it, hopefully by the end of this week when I'll be teaching a class this weekend, so I'm going to have it set up by then.
All right.
I'll let you know how that goes.
I'm interested.
But
all right, back so the SIG pistol.
Yeah.
They banned it. Which department is this?
This was the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. And to me, this is just, you know, gut reaction. We're just going to ban the gun. We're not going to look at anything else.
Agencies don't have gut reactions? What are you talking about? That's just poppycock.
Oh, I know.
But seriously, Washington State, I know some of those boys, and they're not a joke. They're serious guys.
So, are we not going to... I mean, criminal justice, like, the part of their thing is, like, investigation, right? Why don't we look at the big picture?
It is. And, but is banning the gun from use going to solve their problem?
My guess is no, if this is a holster issue, which is why I'm really kind of curious to find out what kind of holster they have.
Or an over-geared issue.
That guaranteed.
How much overweight was this officer?
Well...
And I ask because I've got a little muffin top going myself, and it makes getting to my holster kind of a pain in the butt.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I've always advocated for cops in this respect. One of the things I teach in my defensive pistol is, look, police officers are the only ones who have a reasonable reason to reholster without looking quickly. But they generally carry a 5-gallon bucket for a holster.
Those holsters are big.
Hence why shit gets in there.
Right.
Well, and that something could have been in there from his previous donut stop.
Well, and that's exactly right. But back to your point, you know, Brandy and I have been watching, FBI? And every time they send in the TAC team, it's always the fat guy's the first one through the door. He's my favorite. I always cheer for the fat guy.
Well, he's a hell of a bullet guy.
That's what I'm saying.
but the thing about it is, now that I think about it a little bit and I put it in this context, is he fat, or is that just how much gear he's got on?
Could be. I mean, he's running soft and plates. That adds some thickness.
It absolutely does.
He runs all of the gear. He's got a lot of stuff pulling his pants down.
He needs the suspenders.
Yeah. They may have them underneath that vest he's got.
Well, maybe that's when they're in the stack and the guy behind him's got his hand on his shoulder. He's just holding up his suspenders.
Something to hold on to, yeah. No, but all seriousness, you design your stack to be the most successful for the operation. And if you're throwing a big meat shield through the door, it makes a lot of sense.
That's one way to put it.
We call that the bullet sponge.
Applicable, sure. Yikes.
But with your overburdened belts and chest rigs and everything, one of the things when we do our recon classes, I'll get guys come in, and I've seen every chest rig, plate carrier, you know, combination, whatever, is about out there, right? And I'll get guys that come in, and they have this brand-new rig, and, oh, this is so awesome because I paid $500 for it, and it's Expedition, and da-da-da-da-da, and it ends up not working for them. And the reason is because it comes pre-configured. And it doesn't allow them to adjust for their body, their mission, whatever else. So I always like it when somebody asks me beforehand, hey, what should I get? And I always tell them, run something that's just slick molly. Mm-hmm. And then buy the pouches. And I get why guys don't want to do that, because it's more expensive to do it that way. Because the pouches are expensive. The carrier's expensive. I get it. But if this is your first one, I strongly recommend you just get slick molly, get the pouches as you need them so that you can configure it the way you want, because I guarantee you the way you set it up the first time is not going to be the way you set it up 5 years from now.
Well, it may be a whole different setup mission to mission.
That's true too.
Right? Are you going into assert your dominance, or are you going into observe and talk on a radio?
Right.
I mean, so how do you set yours up for the recon mission? What do you got?
Well, depends. So both of my rigs are basically set up the same. My plate carrier, which I've been running for, 25 years now.
More than a day.
Yep. More than a day. And it is, you know, I would say I'm in the thousands of hours in this thing. And I reconfigured it every week. Because okay. Trying to figure out how I wanted it. And I kept coming back to a certain configuration, and I pretty much stuck with that for the last decade.
Okay.
A couple years ago, I decided because when I would do the reconnaissance stuff where I didn't need the armor and I didn't need all the stuff, but I didn't want to spend the money on another chest rig, I just dropped plates and just run the plate carrier with no plates. It worked just fine. But I finally broke down and I found a chest rig that I liked. Now, it came pre-configured. The catch is, it's configured the way I would have put it together anyway.
All right. So you shopped and shopped and shopped for this thing.
I did for probably 2 years before I finally settled on one.
Okay.
And even then, you know, it's got the pockets on the side, which I use. And then I got the four mags in the front, which I can actually carry eight, which is nice.
Can't have too much ammo.
Right. But I have a place for my knife. I have a place for my radio. And on the chest, I can run two pistol mags or my Leatherman. That's it.
You put your Leatherman on the chest rig.
Yes.
That's interesting.
My reason for that is that thing is, as we all know, it's a multiple-use tool.
Absolutely.
And the chest rig is going to be the last thing I'm going to drop if I have to start dropping gear. So my chest rig contains my fighting load, carries some medical, carries my survival tools. That's pretty much it. And ammo. And that's it.
Perfect.
Because that's the last thing I'm going to drop.
That was really the nut of the question I was getting at is what do you prioritize and how do you set yours up? You got to have the tools that you need every trip.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be spots for mission critical stuff.
Right.
Somalia taught us something. Don't neglect gear just because somebody says, we'll be back before lunch. It'll be fine. Well, they ended up being out there overnight, and they really could have used some of their kit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm guilty of taking more than I should, almost always, and never using half of it, which is fine. But back to the SIG conversation, a duty cop, he knows what he needs on a day-to-day.
Right.
Why carry all of that crap?
Because it's regulation.
Okay.
If they get caught without it, then they get in trouble.
Good. Now, I led you into a conversation. Regulation. What bean counter is sitting in an office somewhere that's never worn any of this shit saying you must have it?
Right. No, I don't disagree with you. I complain about the bean counters all the time because they're the reason that we have objective standards for police training. Rather than, hey, we need to teach you to think and respond to what's going on in front of you.
And I will offer that it's probably the same bean counter that authorized that holster, that pistol,
yep,
with all the crap attached to it, and now he's going to ban it from use.
Well, it's probably more complicated than that because somebody paid him to pick that out of whatever got...
Oh, agreed.
I mean, you know that's going
on. We all know how it works. But it's the same guy that's banning it now is the one that told him he had to have it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You see the irony there?
Yeah, I do. I do. All right. Well, let's take a break. I'm going to go find some holsters, and we will be right back.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations. Using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
Okay, so I went and I got you a Safariland ALS with a light.
You did, and I ain't big enough man to say that I'm wrong when I'm wrong, and I stand corrected. Guys, I can get my finger into that holster, onto the trigger, and depress it while it's holstered and hooded. the light application on this holster might actually be causing a safety issue.
Well, I do know that with those holsters, a lot of them, that's where the retention is. It grabs it by the light.
Interesting. Well, this example, if this is the type of thing he was carrying, their argument is very plausible. Because if my little Chinese fingers can get in there, so could a handcuff hook.
Yeah.
That's plausible.
And until this, I'd never thought about it. But I'm very, very cognizant, like holstering and making sure things aren't getting in there.
A little more material around the trigger guard would probably prevent that. But
if you do that, are you going to be able to clear the light?
Yeah. I don't know. It's plausible with the way that is.
Now, I do think, now, granted, I'm running an old school TLR-2 on this. And that was a fat piece of kit.
Well, law enforcement rigs are typically not worried about the fat.
Right.
So,
but more modern lights, you start getting up to like TLR-6, TLR-7, and they are like the width of the slide, which I think would probably help prevent that.
Yeah.
But not knowing what light he had on there, not knowing the exact holster, but I'm guessing this is pretty representative of the holster that he had.
If that's the case, then it's possible. Yeah, that could happen. I stand corrected.
That didn't happen very often.
No. I was really skeptical because all the other holsters I've seen, that area is extremely protected and guarded. And it's molded more towards the pistol, so you can't get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of impressed.
Well, that's
what if this guy's using this holster because it was given to him, but he does not have a light on his pistol?
That's entirely possible.
It is. It totally is.
And if that's the case, that creates a lot of extra space in there.
But holstered and hooded, I can get a finger in there and press the trigger. It could go off in the holster. There's nothing to say that anything foreign in there would be a problem. It totally could. So the pistol's probably not the problem if that's the case.
Right. Oh my God, we just myth busted here on the show.
Wow. Yeah, that's a little shocking, actually. The G-code stuff I run doesn't do that.
No, I love G-code, and I've actually been very, very impressed with it's a company called Dara.
I'm sure you've shown me some of Dara's stuff, but I don't have any of it personally.
I love it. It's very Safari Land-ish. And full disclosure, about the same price range. What I like about it is that the hood is thumb released, but it's also spring loaded. So I don't have to, like with the Safari Land, where I have to push down and push forward to clear the hood. This, I just push a button and the hood comes clean.
Yeah. My G-code, the hood is a thumb drive and the hood goes spring activated. I don't have to mess with it.
Mm-hmm. I do like that.
I have to physically put it back.
Right.
But at that point, I'm putting things away and I can take my time.
Right. And I have kind of wondered about that because I always have that in my back of my mind. Man, if I'm crawling around in the brush or something, if I'm doing the recon, whatever, something's going to catch that button and depress my hood and I might lose my gun or something bad might happen like that. Has yet to happen.
I have done some dumb shit in stupid situations and I've never had my hood come open.
I haven't either.
Inadvertently.
Not saying that it's not a possibility, but I think it's pretty rare.
God, what would it? Now you got me interested. What would it take to make that hood go inadvertently?
You know, Brandy and I have done some stalks where I very well could believe we would have caught into something.
Which brings me to full circle in the conversation. You and I both talked about the stuff we carry, right? I'm interested to hear about Brandy's kit. I know you set it up for her for the most part, but then end up carrying most of it for her.
Shit's heavy. Don't need it.
Don't need it. See, there it is.
I don't need it. I'm sneaky like that. So if I am running from someone, say at my house or whatever, I have several to exit plan. Some of them require a window, and I don't need all this shit to snag up on.
Well, you're in your house, and you have all your stuff in like 9 million drawers. It's fine. But out when you were doing some training, you carried your own stuff for the most part, but what you didn't need, you offload it to somebody else.
And to be fair on that part, I was working as a photographer, so I wasn't really carrying magazines. I had extra batteries. I had different stuff.
She did. I mean, your kit was pretty much configured the way mine was, but...
More Clif bars than anybody would ever want to consume.
She hates those, by the way. You should send them to her in the mail.
Nasty little bastards.
They're good, but if you've eaten too many of them, I can see it.
But yeah, and that was a class where we weren't shooting. It was all about training tactics and patrolling and movement and things like that. So yeah, now to be fair, we weren't supposed to, but where we were at, everybody in that class that had a handgun had snake shot.
Again, you take what you need.
Yeah. But I mean, I was carrying, I had empty mags in my pouches, and I think I had a radio in one, and I mean, it just, I what I needed for the day. Now, I had more map stuff on me than anything, because that's what I was doing. I was running point. I was figuring out the route doing that.
Fair enough. Snake shot. Interesting stuff. I have diffused a very hostile confrontation one time with snake shot, and it's effective way more than you think it is.
Yeah.
It's not just tiny little BBs for the little creaky crawlies.
No. So, all right, explain.
I got into a situation where it became confrontational. I knew I had 3 rounds of snake shot and then slugs after. And diffused the situation very simply by shooting the dude in the foot with some snake shot.
You know, I used to set up my shotgun, my kind of home defense shotgun. And I started out with it was a rubber slug, was the first round out.
Damn.
Then it went to birdshot. Then it went to buckshot. Then it went to slugs. So it just progressively got worse if you keep coming. I'm going to give you a chance to walk out the door.
I've been hit with a rubber slug out of a shotgun before. That's not playing around.
Oh, no, it sucks. But you're not going to die.
It gives you a decision to leave. Now, you could die. They call that less lethal now, non-lethal.
When we were in Alaska fishing, the guides had their guns set up interesting. They had a firecracker round that went out and blew up.
Okay.
And then it was birdshot, number 6.
Mm-hmm.
It was buckshot, and then slugs till the end of the magazine.
Right.
But that's for bears. Give them the opportunity to go the other way,
mm-hmm.
and when they don't, it ratchets up in intensity.
Well, and that was my thinking behind the shotgun, was I'm going to give you a chance. You know, you're going to come at me, you're going to threaten me, and I'm going to put a rubber slug in your chest.
There's so two you schools like of thought. Poking the bear, then you were poking the bear on multiple levels.
Well, so on one of our helicopter rides, they dropped us in water that didn't have a name, and one of the juvenile grizzlies there didn't like us being there, and we got to see the firecracker rounds work quite well. Went out, hit him in the face, blew up in front of him. He stood up and decided he wanted to go the other direction pretty quickly. So it didn't have to go to the next round. But
you could have made him angry, but he was juvenile. If he would have been full-blown...
Yeah, it might have been more serious, but...
Let's tick him off first and then see what we got.
That shotgun was ready for anything that started to come that way. And I'll tell you... double aught and then slugs out of a shotgun are pretty formidable.
Just saying, they can cover some ground. I don't think I'd start with the rubber one.
Well, how does Clint Smith put it? Shotguns take pieces off of people and throw them on the floor?
That's correct. He was very, very more explicit than that when he said it. But yes. The Bear Academy here in Wyoming for the Game and Fish guys, they're funny. When the guy gets out of school, somebody's family always buys him this big hog leg, big bore revolver gun, right? But they've got this mannequin up on the mountain, and it's on rails, and it's pulled by a pulley system with a four-wheeler to simulate a charge. And it does a pretty good job. You got this big mannequin and a speaker system. It simulates a charge. And this guy doesn't know it's coming. Every year, he jerks that pistol and empties it, never hits the mannequin. And then they hand him the tool of the trade, which is an 870 shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And properly loaded, that's very effective, even if you are terrified.
Yeah. And you got to be, you really got to think about it. Just because it's a big bore doesn't make it necessarily effective on a big bear.
If you hit, it hits like the hammer of God. but you have to hit.
But you got to hit. And going for the head is not necessarily the best place.
Not on a bear, it's not.
It'll skip right off the top.
Their top of their head's really, really hard and thick.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like some men I know.
Like all the men you know.
But back to your, you said you had two schools of thought.
Yeah, so there are people that will argue, don't play around. If you're going to squeeze the trigger, end it.
I'm one of those.
And then you just illustrated the mindset that, well, I'm going to give him a chance, and the lawyers can then work it out, but I was being humane.
Well, and that's kind of what has changed my thought process.
Okay.
Especially after Rittenhouse. It's like, no, put him in the dirt.
Put him in the dirt. Because now we've learned that the methodology has changed. They come to the fight.
Right.
Rather than run away.
Right. No, I have since changed my thinking on that. But
interesting how the evolution works, though.
But to be fair, you know, where I live now, if I hear a bump in the night, I'm not even going to bother with a shotgun. I'm going straight for the AR-15. Because chances are I'm going to be dealing with a four-legged predator.
Or a two-legged,
I mean,
methed out.
Well, yeah, but they show up in daylight.
They may think it's daylight. Either way, I'm of the school of thought. Don't play around. End it.
Yeah. And yeah, my thinking is I've all done that, too.
And
that,
I'm sorry, but with the cameras you have on your property, you want to be the one telling the story.
Yeah.
And let the cameras back it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple.
And interestingly enough, Brandy and I were talking about this last night. I didn't realize this until she explained it to me that, you know, we've talked about it here before about Brady psyche, attacky psyche, and the distortion of the perception of time. And what you were explaining to me was that you don't really experience the tacky psyche. It's everything slows down for you.
Yes, that gives me time to make decisions.
And it's crazy. Like, she was describing, like, when, well, you got hit by the deer. You didn't really hit the deer. But, like, she's explaining to this in slow motion how it all went down. And every decision that she made in probably the span of a second and a half.
Half a second. By the time you see that deer coming across the highway, you do not have time. It's over.
But it feels like you have time. And I made decisions, sure. And maybe they came faster than it felt.
But you had that perception.
But I made decisions. Now, there are people who don't. They just go into what? Some sort of shock and just don't do anything.
They lock up or they act.
Yeah.
And those who act will probably tell you the same thing you experienced. Time seems to slow.
Right. And that's all boils down to previous experience.
Right.
Which is why go train. Because the reason that people freeze up is because they don't have that index card to access.
Correct.
So.
Reaction's a big deal.
Yeah.
Muscle memory, big deal.
And that's and back to our gear discussion. That's one of the biggest reasons to go train. Go get the skills, but use your gear.
Right.
Only carry what you train with. Don't carry all the shit.
And remember, if you're a law enforcement professional, you're going to have 0.2 seconds to figure it out and react in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And the bean counters and the insurance guys and internal affairs are going to have 4 months to pick it apart and decide your fate.
Right.
And they can pick apart things and make up shit in the middle of it that wasn't even real.
And I would be curious, if you were a law enforcement, I would be really, really curious to hear from you guys. What kind of policy do you have that you can go to your higher-ups and go, do we really need to carry this? Do we really need to carry this quantity?
Well, fair enough. I think a lot of that is going to be officer discretion. But if it's policy and mandated they carry it...
That's what I'm wondering.
That'd be an interesting discussion.
That's what I'm wondering. So, law enforcement guys, gals, hit us up. I want to know.
We'll be curious.
You know, what's your take on all this, and what's your department policy? Let us know. Wow, that kind of went quick.
We're there already?
We're there. Nice. So, unlike Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission, don't blame the gun.